Take your Bibles, if you will, and turn to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. It is easy, as we go through this life, to be distracted. It's easy to be distracted by people. It's easy to be distracted by things. Frequently, in my life, I've noticed that I get caught up in something. And before I realize it, I've been distracted for quite some time. We recently bought a house, and we've been renovating that house because it was in poor condition, and it was two flats, and we've been converting it back to one house, and a lot of work going on, and that's been a distraction. It's something that you can get caught up in, that of getting things done, and it is in our best interest as Christians to make sure that we don't get distracted, that we don't start to place other things as our treasure, other things as our focus. The house that we're building is something that's necessary. We have to have a place to live. So those things are necessary, but if we're not careful, they become too important. Our focus is taken up by them, and we end up placing them as a treasure, which they ought not to be, because we're pilgrims. We're walking through this life on our way to somewhere else. But if we're not careful, we start to think this life is much more important than it should be, that the things of this life are much more important than they should be. And we do that not just by thinking upon those objects, by saying, oh, I want this, I want this, this is so important. But we also do it by worrying about those objects, about how those things are going to work out. Because God is sovereign. God is in control of all of those things. He's in control of where we're going to sleep tonight, whether it's going to be in our bed or if it's going to be somewhere else. He's in control of our steps as we walk down the street. All of those things are ordained of God. And if we're not careful, we can be busy about many things and forget the important thing. Isn't that what Martha did? Martha was cumbered about many things. If you remember the story when Mary and Martha were having a meal for Jesus at their house. And Martha comes to the Lord and says, Lord, Mary's not helping me. I've got so much going on and I need help. And Jesus says to Martha that she's cumbered about by many things. But Mary has chosen the important part. What was it that Mary was doing? She was focusing upon the Lord. She was focusing upon the Lord, even though there are many things that need to be done. Now, I'm not saying that to say you shouldn't do the things you need to do. We have to be good stewards. We have to be responsible for what God has put before us. But we would be well to learn from the author of Ecclesiastes that the things of this life will pass on to someone else one day. The house that you own will be someone else's one day. Whether it's through sales, you selling it, through you passing it on to your children, or through the queen owning it, or something else, it will be someone else's eventually. The shoes that my son is enjoying playing with right now, one day will no longer be on his feet. He'll either outgrow them, they'll fall apart, someone will take them, who knows? But we get caught up in things. We get focused upon things that will not last. They will fade and they will wither, just as the grass withers. Just as you see the grass being cut outside. Recently the lawn guy came and cut your grass. Well, the grass is going to grow again. The grass is going to be cut again. And it's a constant cycle. Our lives, although much longer than the life of the grass, is the same way. It's the same cycle. One day it will fade. One day we'll depart and we'll move on. The question becomes is, where was our focus while we were here? What were the things that were our treasure upon this earth? Were they the things of earth or were they the things of heaven? The scripture that I read in Luke chapter 12, I spoke about it quite a bit, and then here in Matthew chapter 6 in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives us a warning in verses 19 through 21. He says, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now keep in mind that as Jesus has been preaching the Sermon on the Mount, as he has been going through the different things, he is aiming at the heart. He's aiming at the heart to let us know that, number one, we cannot attain to heaven through our own actions, through our own deeds. We do not have the power. We do not have the righteousness that is necessary to attain heaven. He says that your righteousness must be greater than the righteousness of the Pharisees to enter the kingdom of heaven. And from the eyes of the world, the Pharisees were the best there were. He's saying it takes something greater than that. And then he expounds the law and tells us that the Pharisees weren't as righteous as they thought they were. Because they were doing things, the outward actions were right, but the inward motives were wrong. Because their heart wasn't pure. And in chapter 6, he goes into that in greater detail and says, don't be like them. Because they're doing it for the praise of men. They're doing these things so that the people will say, wow, this person is a good person. This person has done well. He says, don't be like that. And he goes through the actions of helping others, of giving alms. And he talks about prayer. And he talks about our devotions to God in fasting. And he culminates that in this section that we're looking at this morning. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth. Don't lay up for yourselves. And that's what we're going to be looking at this morning is, where is our treasure? What is our treasure? I think that's the culmination of this section that Jesus has been talking about in chapter 6, where he's saying, be not like the hypocrites when you're looking for your alms, when you're giving alms, when you're helping others, when you're doing deeds of service. Don't be like them, because they're looking for the praise of men. Don't be like them in prayer, because they're praying out loud and they're drawing attention to themselves and saying how righteous they are. No, pray to your Father in secret. And your Father which heareth in secret shall reward thee openly. And then he says the same thing about fasting. Don't let people know you're fasting. Don't let people know about your devotions to the Lord. Do those things in secret. And so that you appear unto men to be healthy and in normal state. Because your Father sees that. See, God sees those things. And it all goes back to those motives as to where your treasure is and what your treasure is. So the question becomes, what is your treasure? Well, possessions can certainly be treasure, can't they? The things that we own, or the things that we want to own. See, sometimes some of the people that are the most treasure-seeking are the ones that don't have the treasure. They're looking for it. You know, I grew up very poor. And in my family, we always talked about being rich. What was it like to be rich? What was it like to be rich? I think my family was more covetous and more treasure-seeking about the things of this world than those that were rich. Because they wanted what someone else didn't have. And so those things that we didn't have became a greater treasure to us than someone who had it. Because the person who had it, they had it. They knew what it was. But to us, it was something great. Something fantastic. And so possessions become a treasure. Whether it's a nice house, or a large bank account, or a good retirement fund, or a vehicle, or your clothing, or a nice holiday. These things that we possess sometimes possess us. They take up our minds, and they control what we do. And what we do is based off of that instead of based off of the will of God. Prestige is very nice. It's nice for people to look up to you. It's nice for people to say, "Wow, this is a good person, isn't it?" The Pharisees really were like this. You look in verses 2 and 5 and 16 of chapter 6, they were seeking the praise of men. They were seeking that prestige. They were seeking people to say, look at the righteousness of the Pharisees. Look at what they are. That's who I ought to be like. That's the person I want to follow. That's what the Pharisees were seeking. That was their treasure. They were seeking that praise. They were seeking that prestige. They were seeking that glory. And they got it. They received it. They got their treasure. But that's fleeting treasure, isn't it? Because they hear it, and then the next day, They're seeking it again because it's gone. The next day and the next day and every single day, they're constantly going to have to be listening to someone to say how good they are, to say well done, to say something positive to them, because their treasure is the voice of someone else. That's a hard treasure because you're constantly going to be having to look for it. You know, we talked about the farmer in the story in Luke we didn't talk about, but in Luke 12, you've got that farmer and he's got his treasure in his barns and he says, I've got to tear down my barns and build bigger because I don't have enough to store my treasure. Well, yes, that farmer died that night, but at least his treasure was there. At least he could eat some of it, right? The Pharisee, their treasure is non-existent. The person who's looking for the praise from someone else, their treasure, they can't even hold it in their hands. You see all these folks and these actors and these athletes and the comedians and all of these so-called stars. You know, they get paid a lot of money and they receive that money and you think, well, is that their treasure? In most cases, that is not their treasure. Their treasure is to hear someone cheer their name. To hear someone say, well done. To hear someone laugh at their joke. And they constantly have to keep doing well to keep getting that treasure. And it's fleeting. It goes away just as quickly as it came. As soon as they're not as good at doing what they did, that treasure's gone. It's departed. Do you seek treasure like that? Do you seek compliments about your character? Compliments because you've done something nice. Compliments because you were kind to someone. Because you got something right. Because you were funny. Because you were good at a particular game or sport. Or you've raised your children well. Whatever the case may be, do you seek that? Well, what about people? You know, sometimes for some of us, people can be a treasure. Our families. Our families sometimes become treasures. They become the thing that we're always concerned about. Always seeking. For some people, they're seeking a spouse. For some people, they're seeking children. And their whole life is wrapped up in that thing. For some people, it's taking care of their family. Keeping their family close. Or your friends. Or your neighbors. And people become your treasure. How many relationships you have. How many people you know. Why do you do it? What's your motive behind that? Is it to seek God's glory by speaking forth His word? Or is it to have comfort when you need it? Because a lot of times people will comfort you. And God uses that at times. But our comfort ought to be coming from the Lord, not from people. It's just as fleeting as any other. These things stem from a love for the world. For a love of the things of earth as opposed to the things of heaven. Now, it's hard to say that. It's hard to acknowledge that. But no matter what your treasure is, if it's an earthly treasure, it stems from loving something that is fleeting. Something that will disappear. Something that will flow through your hands like water. You won't be able to hold on to it. When you die, whenever that is, you'll have nothing, just as you came into this world. You'll be able to take nothing with you. These aren't new statements, but we have to understand that there is treasure that has value even after this life is over. There is treasure there. So where is that treasure? What does it consist of? Well, when you think about it, when you think about the treasure, you realize through some things what it is by what it isn't. By the negatives. You know, our labels, the worldliness as a Christian and being a Christian for the past 28 years, I at times have labeled worldliness by the things I'm not guilty of. By the things that I've not got a weakness for. Well, I don't like to do that particular thing, so that's worldly. What I like to do, well, that's not worldly. That's not got anything to do with the world. And sometimes we label things a particular way so that we make ourselves feel better. Because there are some good things in life. Family is a good thing. Church is a good thing. These things are good things, but is it the best thing? In the sense of, why do you do those things? What is the motive behind your deeds? Because that's what determines whether it's treasure in heaven or treasure on earth. Because that's how God sees things. You see the foolish farmer in Luke 12. Here he is, he's going through and he's building these barns. Now, his motive in doing that was himself. He was going to please himself. He was going to eat, drink, and be merry. And that was an improper motive. His treasure was what's in those barns. Now, that man could have, he didn't, but he could have said, look at all that the Lord has blessed me with. Look at all these things that he's given to me. I can't contain them all. So either I'll give some to others, or I'll build some bigger barns so that I can store them for those that have need further on down the road. You see, you can think of Joseph in Egypt. What did they do? They built great grain houses to store the grain for in those 7 years of plenty, because they knew 7 years of famine were coming. And the farmer could have done that. He could have said, I'm going to put these things aside to give to others, to be a blessing to those around me, to prepare in case there's a tragedy and I can help. And his motive would have been completely different. His action would have been the same. His motive would have been completely different, and he would have had treasure in heaven as opposed to treasure on earth. It's all down to that motive. You think about the rich man and Lazarus in Luke 16. Here is Lazarus sitting outside his gate, and he's constantly hungry. He's constantly seeking ways to survive the next day. Here is the rich man inside the gate. He's eating, he's drinking, he's having everything he needs. And when the end comes, here is Lazarus in the bosom of Abraham in paradise. And here is the rich man in hell. What could the rich man have done differently? He could have certainly helped Lazarus in the earthly life, instead of being so covetous of his own goods. You know, it's, if I said to you, I'm going to ask you for an investment. Give me £5 a week for the next 20 years. And at the end of that time, I will double your money. Whatever that amount would have ended up being for £5 a week for a year, for 20 years. But at the end of that 20 years, instead of having that sum, you're going to have twice that. You say, well, that's a good investment. Now, if I came to you and said, now, I'd like you to give me £5 a week for the next 20 years, and at the end of that 20 years, you will have nothing. I'll give you nothing in return. Would you give me those £5 a week? Would it be interesting to you to get that money, to give that money and get nothing back? Well, that's a completely foolish idea, isn't it? You'd be a fool to do something like that. To sign a contract saying, I'm going to give money, knowing I'll get nothing in return. But when we look at our things, when we look at our earthly treasures, that's exactly what we're doing. Because we'll get nothing in return for them. They will pass away. They will fade. Someone else will own them. They'll wear out. The new car smell will disappear. That happens. But if we look at them as our treasure, that's just like giving someone £5 a month, knowing that in 20 years you'll have nothing from it. It's just as foolish. Instead, we ought to be putting our focus on heavenly treasure. And it's all through how we deal with and what our motives are about what here is here in front of us on earth. Because they'll all corrupt. They'll all go away. The new car smell wears off, things rust, moths break through, our clothes will not last forever. We're not the Israelites that God is going to give us our clothes for 40 years. Now, through wise use and things like that, we can make things last longer. But one day they will be gone. One day they will disappear and someone else will use it. Or someone else will break through and steal it. They'll get it. Or we'll pass it on to someone else. I still chuckle at the idea that if you don't have a will and you don't have an heir, the queen gets what you have, what you own. I'm not sure how that works, but the idea that someone else is going to own it is throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. You work hard in this life, you build up treasure, and then you give it to somebody else. I pity Solomon. I pity Solomon. You think about all that he did, all the wisdom that he had, and all the wealth that he built up. He was the wealthiest person ever in the nation of Israel. Anyone before him, anyone after him. He was the wealthiest. And he had a fool for a son. He tried to teach his son wisdom. He tried to do it through this book of Proverbs. And he said to his son, if you follow these things, you'll do well. As soon as Solomon dies, Rehoboam comes to the throne and he flitters it away. There goes the majority of the wealth. There goes 5/6 of the kingdom. There goes all the prestige. There goes all his help. There goes all his future. You read in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 1 through 11, he says, I said in mine heart, go to now. I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and a peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. You see, in his wisdom, he forgot wisdom. He didn't realize that all those things that he was putting his hand to do for his enjoyment would one day depart. And when he had finished doing all those great works, building all those great houses, amassing all that treasure, it was worthless because it was going to go to somebody else. It was going to depart and go someplace else. And that's the negative of earthly treasure. It will go. It will corrupt. It will rust. Someone might steal it. And so we have a need to see Jesus as that ultimate treasure. To see Jesus first and foremost. In Matthew 13, Jesus is speaking about the kingdom of heaven. He says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto the treasure hidden in a field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. You see, there is a man farming in someone else's field. And we don't know what the arrangement was, but he would most likely get some of the crop, and the owner would get some of the crop, and he's plowing along. And he runs into something. He probably thinks it's a stone. And he's going to move the stone. And he bends down to move the stone. And he finds it's treasure. Someone buried something there. And then it was forgotten about. Person died. And whosoever treasure it was is no longer their treasure. And he says, I want that treasure. And so he covers it up. He goes and he sells everything. And he goes to the man who owns the field and says, I want that field. And he buys the field. And he goes and he digs up that treasure, and the treasure is his. And Jesus is saying, that's exactly what he's like. Because he is worth more than everything else you possess. Now, he's not teaching us here that we have to go sell everything and give that money. That's not the moral of the story here. The moral of the story is that Jesus is that valuable. That if it costs you everything else in life, then it's worth it. Because everything else in life is a fleeting treasure. That it's right there in the idea that treasure was hid by someone else. It was no longer there. Jesus is that treasure. He's that valuable that he's worth giving everything else up for. He says it again in the next verse, the pearl of great price. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. You see, the man who was farming in the field, he wasn't looking for a treasure. He was just going about his labor. And he found Jesus. Here's a man who's looking for something. He's going about looking for something. He's going about looking for valuable things. And he's finding pearls, and he's buying and selling and trading in pearls. And all of a sudden, he finds a pearl of great price. We saw a treasure show the other day, and they had a pearl that was that big. And then someone said, how much is that worth? And they said, we have no idea, because we've never tried to sell it, and we never planned to sell it. It was a pearl of great price. And this man, he was selling and buying pearls, and he found something that surpassed his imagination. He wasn't looking for the pearl of great price, but when he found it, because he was looking for pearls, he recognized that it's something better than everything else he owned. And so he went and sold everything that he possessed, every other pearl that he ever had. He sold them all and went and bought that pearl, because that was an ultimate treasure. And Jesus says that's what he is like. That's the kingdom of heaven. That's the true treasure. It's worth everything else that you have. Because everything else you have is worthless in eternity's sake. All the goods we have, whether it's shoes or clothes or glasses or money or cars or land or houses, friendship, praise of men, will all pass away. It will all fade over time. And when you die, you can take none of those things with you. And so isn't it so much more wonderful to give those things up, because you're going to give them up one day anyhow, for something that will never be taken away, for something that will never go away? Isaiah says, God says in Isaiah 45, look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth. For I am God, and there is none else. I have sworn by myself, the word is gone out of my mouth in righteousness, and shall not return, that unto me every knee shall bow, every tongue shall swear. God has said to us, look unto me and be ye saved. Look unto me and be ye saved. He's sworn it. The word's gone out. He's not going to take it back. That's a treasure that will not fade away. He's promised it. He's sworn by the only thing that is possible for God to swear by, himself. He's sworn it. And here's the thing, every knee will bow one day. Every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. The question is, when is it done? Is it done in this life? Or is it done in the next life? Because if you willingly do it in this life, and praise Him and glorify Him and trust Him, then in the next life you're going to be doing it gladly. But if it's not done in this life, the next life you will be doing it. But it will not be gladly. There will be no joy. There will be no treasure. You see, Jesus Christ is that heavenly treasure. He has the ultimate value, and because of that, motives can change. Why we do what we do can then have a major impact on our treasure. We can have the proper motives, because Jesus tells us that treasures exist. He says that throughout chapter 6 here. You look at this. Let me make sure I've got the right verses. In verse 4, that thine alms also may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. That's a treasure. That's a treasure that he's promising. In verse 6, but when thou prayest, But when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. That's treasure. That's treasure from God, not treasure from man. That's the same thing he says again about fasting. In verse 17, but thou, when thou fastest, anoint thine head and wash thy face, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret. And thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. You see, we don't want to do things for the reward. Because then again, that's the same thing. You're doing it for the wrong motives. If I'm helping you because I'm going to get a reward for it, whether it's the reward of your praise or a reward in heaven, I'm doing it for the wrong reason. But if my motives are correct in the sense that I'm doing it because of the love of Jesus Christ, because of what he's done for me, and showing that love to someone else, then there will be a reward. There will be treasure that will be gained. And so Jesus is telling us to purify our motives. Purify why we do what we do. Purify that, and you'll have treasure in heaven. In Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46. It says, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee? Or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in? Or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, or thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. You see, it's all about the motives. You see, Jesus is saying there in that section, what you do for others, as you're doing it for me, that has value. That has value. But when we're so caught up in what we get, so caught up in our own treasures, then our focus is completely different. So it comes down to, how do you use what you have? Do your possessions possess you? Do they control you? Or do you control them? Do you use them for God's glory, for God's honor, for his name's sake? In 1 Timothy, Paul says in chapter 6, charge them that are rich in this world, that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy, that they do good, that they be rich in good words, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. See, Paul is telling Timothy there to make sure that those that have, use what they have for the right reasons, for God's glory, for God's honor, that they are willing to distribute, willing to communicate. That's not having a conversation. That's helping someone. That's giving alms. That's helping someone who's in need. Because that's laying up treasure. That's laying up treasure in heaven. That's where moth doesn't corrupt. That's where a thief can't break through and steal. Because it's in the hand of God. Hebrews 11 teaches us that Abraham and Moses and all of those in the honor roll of faith, they were doing exactly that. They didn't see themselves as walking this life for this life's goods. They were walking towards that eternal city, and they recognized that the things that they had possessed, they didn't have any value other than how they used them for God, other than how they used them for him, because we're custodians. We're stewards of these things, because they will go into our hands and they'll pass on to someone else from our hands. So the question is, how do we pass them on? How do we use them? How do we make use of them? Because those heavenly treasures, they see no corruption. They see no moth. In 1 Peter it says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time." That fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. Where is your treasure? What is your treasure? That's a test that we have to put upon ourselves. What are the things you value? Where are the things you value? How do you use the things you have? Have you done what the farmer did? Have you done what the pearl merchant did? Have you sold all for Christ? And I'm not saying that in the physical sense of saying, go sell your house. I'm saying that in the spiritual sense. Have you given up the value of those treasures and turned to Christ and said, no, he's the ultimate treasure? And if you have, do you live your life in light of that treasure, seeing that these things are just fleeting, they're just passing, and live for the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ? Because that's where you will build earthly, heavenly treasure. That's where the moth can't come in. That's where rust doesn't happen. That's where God is. And that's where our treasure ought to be. And so we point you to him.